And as in the past, I'll give you 7 clues to help you identify this mystery Bible character. And then at the end, if you know who the person is, we'll give you the opportunity to tell me. Clue number 1, we're looking for the name of a man who was as strong at the age of 85 as he had been at 40. Clue number 2, God gave this man a present for 45 years of faithful service. 3rd clue, this man asked to live in the land of the giants, the area from which Goliath later came. Now I want to give you a helpful clue. 4, this man was one of the 12 spies Moses sent to spy out the promised land after leaving Egypt. 5th, this man had a name which meant wholehearted. 6th, this man watched as God divided the Red Sea and closed that same sea over the Egyptian army. 7th, this man refused to be classified a grasshopper. Who is it? Caleb. After 3 guesses, Caleb. Caleb is our man. That's who we'll be studying tonight. In my dealings with myself and with my dealings with other Christians, it doesn't seem that God inspires in every one of us what I call a big dream. Or what you might say is an intense burning desire that must be fulfilled before you die. Or a deep-seated longing in your heart to see something come true. Or an overwhelming ambition. Most Christians don't seem to have that kind of experience in their life. It's said that most people go nowhere in life because that's where they want to go. And most Christians supposedly are willing to take whatever comes. They have no real ambition, have no great desire about the future. It's said that most folks will settle for something less than what is always available to them, either because of laziness or because of fear or because of unbelief. And common criticism leveled against the church by many critics is that we think too small. We settle for too little. And that we don't believe what Paul taught in Ephesians 3:20. You have a Bible turned there. At least it doesn't seem that we believe it. Paul says, unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, we ask too small. We think too small. And God is able to do far more than we ever ask Him to do. And it seems like He's even willing to be challenged by something greater than we can think of. Now, Caleb had a dream. Quite unusual, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And this dream, I think, came about as a result of his experience while being a part of the 12-man spy team sent into the land of Canaan to look over the land and then make a report back to Moses and the people. Why did Moses send the spies? Good question. I think he did so not because check out the possibility of conquest, because God had already said, the victory is yours, I'm giving you this land, all you have to do is go and take it. I think Moses questioned the possibility of victory. And that's not why he sent the spies to see if the trip was a wise idea or not. I think he sent the spies to gather information and to gather evidence. They would come back and present this to the people, and that would whip their appetite to make no delay. Let's go ahead and go. In other words, he was going to have the spies show them things they wanted. They had not had in Egypt, and that they would love to have as their possession. And so it was sort of a tantalizing trip to bring back souvenirs and say, look what you boys can have, let's go take them. That's what I think he was doing. He was trying to whet their appetite. Now, in Deuteronomy, the 1st chapter, verse 20 and 21, God says, you have come to the mountain of the Amorites, which the Lord our God doth give unto us. Behold, the Lord thy God hath set the land before thee. Go up and possess it. As the Lord God of thy fathers has said unto thee, fear not, neither be discouraged. Now, after 40 days of investigating the land, they came back with the report and made it to the people. Of course, you know the story. Verse 25, and they took the fruit of the land in their hands, and they brought it down unto us, and they brought us word again and said, it is a good land which the Lord our God doth give us. I think even they were surprised at the bounty and the goodness and the beauty and the prospect of the land which God had chosen to give them. It was quite a present. And that's where the report of the 12 spies should have stopped, right there. They fulfilled their commission when they made that report. They should have said nothing else besides that. 10 of them, though, had reached an opinion on their own. That's always dangerous. God is not interested in our opinions. He's interested in our faith. Now, I think this is one of the greatest techniques that Satan has in doing battle with the children of the Lord. He started out using this technique with Eve. You know, God has said to her, if you eat of the forbidden fruit, you will die. Satan came along and gave an opinion. I want you to know Satan is not all-knowing, and Satan did not know what would be the outcome if Eve ate that fruit. But he gave his opinion. And his opinion was, no, you're not going to die if you eat the forbidden fruit. His opinion against God's truth. Well, what if Eve was wrong? What if Satan was wrong? Well, to put it very bluntly, he didn't have anything to lose. Eve was the loser, not Satan. He'd already lost. He'd already fallen. He'd already been condemned. I mean, what did he have to lose by offering an opinion? What if it was a lie? Tough luck for Eve, not tough luck for him. Now look at Numbers, if you will. Chapter 13. Same story. Numbers 13, verse 27. You say, well, what if I have my opinion about God's decrees? Look out. Yeah, look out. God, I repeat, is not interested in your opinion. He's only interested in your obedience and your faith. And if your opinion hurts your faith and obedience, then God is more than displeased. God is angry. In other words, by our opinion, we talk ourselves into believing a lie. That's exactly what happened with the 10 spies. And now they're going to spread this contagious falsehood to the entire nation of people. Now look, if you will, verse 27. They say, we come to the land where you sent us, and boy, it flows with milk and honey. And here is some fruit. They showed them the grapes, I guess, or some other kind of fruit. Nevertheless, now this part of the report is opinion. And it should not have been stated. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land. The opinion is they are stronger than we are. And the cities are walled, implying by our opinion we cannot take the walls. And the cities are very great. They are greater than we are. Then he goes on and says, and moreover, to cap it off, I mean, to make things so bad in our eyes, so hopeless, we saw the children of Anak there. Keep that word in mind. Children of Anak. And the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. The whole place is infested with people, all of which are greater than we are. Verse 30. And Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once. I want you to catch Caleb's excitement. I mean, this man is really enthused. He's got a vision. He's got a dream. And his vision involves God. All right, I'll keep that in mind too. For he says, we are well able to overcome any difficulty, hardship, or obstacle, or danger. No problem. Let's go. Verse 31. But the men that went up with him, with the exception of Joshua, opinion now, we are not able to go up against this people, for they are stronger than we are. That's opinion. That's not faith, and that's not obedience. That's opinion. And it's a bad opinion. All right? Verse 32. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched, and the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eats up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. Verse 33 is a very important verse for us. And not only that, but we came across some giants. Remember Goliath? Well, he came from this place. The sons of Anak, they're the giants. And we were in our own sight, as we compared our size to them, we were like little grasshoppers. Now, the reaction of the people is revealed to us in the first verse of the next chapter. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried. Take out the word cry and put in there moaned and groaned and boo-hooed. And the people wept that night. All night they cried. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation complained and said, it had been better off if we had died in Egypt, or that we would have died in the wilderness. Oh, woe is us. I put that in there myself. Now, Caleb and Joshua were the two spies who refused to agree with the opinion of the ten. The majority, not always right. Sometimes they're usually always wrong. And so Caleb and Joshua found themselves in the minority, but they were in the right. They were people who were trusting in faith, not in opinion, not in sight. Now, verse 6, and Joshua and Caleb got so upset with the people, they rent their clothes. They really got upset. And verse 7, they spoke unto the coming of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to search it is a good land. They tried to sell the people on the idea of the value of taking the land right then. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land. There is a condition. And he will give it to us, and it is a land that flows with milk and honey. Don't rebel against the Lord, or don't fear the people of the land. The word, for they are bread for us. Eat them up. No problem. And their defense is departed from them. There's no way they can protect themselves, for the Lord is with us. He'll get the battles. He'll win the battles for us. Notice the reaction of the people to their faith. The congregation bayed, encouraged, cried, stone them, stone them. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will this people provoke me? How long will it be before they believe me? For all the signs that I have showed them, I will smite them. You get the reaction? An opinion that destroys faith, and obedience stirs the anger of God. That's one lesson I want you to learn tonight. Now, the pronouncement was, though, because of prayer of Moses, that God did not kill the people right then, but they would wander in the wilderness 1 year per day they went out and spied the land. 40 days spying the land, and they'd wander in the wilderness 40 years. Every person over the age of 20 would die in those 40 years. So at the end of 40 years, you would have Caleb and Joshua and all those who were 20 years and under at the time of this disobedient act. So that's the scene then. During those 40 years, Israel never stopped complaining and murmuring against God. But Caleb never shared their viewpoint as he walked with them for those 40 years. The people maintain the viewpoint that I think Satan promotes throughout the scriptures, and that is that God is not good, and God is not wise, and God is not powerful, and God is not loving, and God is not trustworthy, and God is not honest. And the people kept saying the same thing all during those 40 years. They were dropping dead like flies in wolves. Can I learn one thing about people? It's easier to discourage someone than it is to encourage them. I've learned that. People will believe a falsehood quicker than they'll believe the truth. It's easier to talk somebody out of doing the will of God than it is to talk them into doing the will of God. I've learned that too. I've also found it's easier to create fear in people than it is to create trust in people. I've learned that too. People seem by nature are very prone to be unbelievers. And so the whole nation became infected with this unbelief. Now, for Caleb there was no room for compromise. There was no place for false opinions that would make God appear to be a liar. He just would not accept them. He would not listen to any suggestion by the ten or by anybody else that would undermine his faith and his obedience in the Lord. Now, Caleb had a dream, had a vision as a result of what took place when the people murmured against God. This is my viewpoint now. I've never heard this preached before. Caleb testified for God. He recommended God would take the people in and give them victory. He did a sales pitch on God. And as things now stood, the people said, "Sorry, Caleb, you didn't convince us." And so Caleb said, "I've got a vision. I'm going to prove that I was right. God, I want a chance to prove. I want to go back 45 years, and I want this thing to be run all over again, and I want this thing to take place 45 years from now, like it's supposed to take place 45 years ago." What I'm talking about is, for 40 years, he dreamed that there would be a rematch between God and the people of Canaan. And he wanted God to vindicate himself in the eyes of the nation of Israel. He wanted to set up, if you might put it this way, he wanted to set up a wrestling match between God and the people of Canaan, especially one group, the grasshopper clan, the sons of Anak. They were the toughest, they were the bullies of the land of Canaan. I mean, they were the number one people that you'd have to overcome. They were the fear and the dread of the entire land. Everybody feared them. And so Caleb said, "I've got a dream. I want to put God in one corner of the ring, and I want to put the giants in the other corner, and I want them to go at it. And I want God to show the people that he could have done it 45 years ago. I want to put him in the ring with the sons of Anak and let them have it out and see who could be the winner. I want a rematch. I want God's honor to be restored to him. But we never know if we don't have the rematch." Interesting dream. Well, 40 years he wanders in the wilderness with Joshua and the other Israelites until they had all died. And then they go in to take Jericho. And 5 years takes place in which the army of Israel is able to capture many of the cities and towns and areas in the land of Canaan. That battle line takes place for 5 years. At the end of 5 years, God sends out a decree. It is time to divide up the land of Canaan among the 12 tribes. Now keep in mind, all of the land had not been conquered. And so the tribes would be given places within that land in which the enemy was still occupying the land. They were still in the dark. It'd be like I say, "Well, I'm going to give you Cuba." And you say, "Hey, man, Cuba is occupied." Well, I say, "Well, that's your problem. I just gave it to you. You go over there and be occupied. You go over and take it." Now, that's the kind of situation that we have in the book here when God divides the land of Israel. Many of the areas that are given to these various tribes are still occupied by manned troops, and they're going to go have to take it if they want. But it's theirs. God said, "I'll help you. I'll give you the victory. But it's yours. You just go take it." When it came time for Judah, the tribe of Judah, to get their portion of the inheritance of the land of Canaan, Caleb, who was a member of that tribe, came before the council that was during the passing out of the land and makes a request. Before Judah gets its land boundaries, he says, I want to make a request. Now look, if you will, at Joshua, the 14th chapter, and that's where we'll take up the story now. Verse 6. Now the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb said unto him, that is to Joshua, he says, I want you to remember something happened 45 years ago. Everybody else around there had forgotten, because undoubtedly they'd all die, you see. But I mean, he says, I want to remind you of something that you know is true. Thou knowest the thing the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses sent me on the spy mission, he says. And I brought him word again as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren, that is the 10, who went out with me, made the heart of the people melt. But I wholly followed the Lord my God. I stood by him. And Moses swore on that day, saying, sure the land whereon thy feet are trodden shall be thy inheritance and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now behold, the Lord hath kept me alive. And he said, these 45 years, he's now 85 years old. Even since the Lord spoke this word to Moses, for the children of Israel were in the wilderness, and now lo, I am this day 45 years old. Then he says, and I am as strong today as I was when I was 40. That's why I use that one of the clues. There was a man that at 85 was as strong as he was when he was 40. I don't think I'll be able to say that. He says, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. Can you picture 85-year-old man going out to war? He says, I'm just as good now as I was when I was 40. Now therefore, verse 12. Well, verse 12. Joshua says, what land do you want? Now if you were going to get first pick, that could be one of my clues. What's the first pick of the land? What would you pick? He didn't pick the prettiest. He did not pick the wealthiest. He did not pick that which had already been occupied and defeated by the army of Israel. What land would you pick? What did he pick? He picked the toughest spot in the land of Canaan. He picked the Cuba. If you're going to pick a spot, what would you pick? Oh, I'd pick Hawaii, you know? He picked Cuba. Then you see, the guy's got first choice. Why? Now therefore he says, give me this mountain. Wherefore the Lord spoke in that day, for thou heardest in that day, how that, there we are now. The Anakims were there. That's what I want. I want the place where those giants live. I want that place where everybody else is considered to be grasshoppers. That's the place I want. Probably all this was said, brother, you can have it. You know, we don't want that spot. If you want it, you got it. And he said, I want that spot where the cities were great and fences tall. And he says, if so be the Lord still be with me, boy, you're going to see some fight when I get up there. I will drive them out as the Lord once said. I would have been done 45 years ago. We're going to have a battle royal up there. We're going to have a rerun of the show that should have been run a long time ago. And I'm going to show you that God can do the impossible. Not this time with a 40-year-old warrior, but with an 85-year-old man. Going to give them better odds, those giants, than they ever had before. Alright? He said, I can prove to you my God is a match for anything that comes out of that land. Well, how'd the battle go? Chapter 15, verse 14. Very short story. And God empowering Caleb. And God drove out the three sons of Anak. Took on three Goliaths. Ran them all out of Canaan. Then they're given their names there. And also the children of Anak. He cleaned the place up. Caleb took the city. Because he believed that God would keep his word. And he proved. And he had his vision and his dream come true. And he exonerated in the honor and the glory of God. That was his dream. He made God look good by taking on the worst people that could be found in the land of Canaan.
He had a big dream, but he had a big God.
Father, this night may we ourselves come to realize that you desire to be honored and gloried. That you do not mind taking on the impossible task, because in doing those, then everybody has to admit you're the one that deserves the credit. May this night, like Caleb, even we have a dream. God can yet do what he wanted to do a long time ago, but has not had the chance. May we be the one that gives him that chance. In Jesus' name we ask you. Amen.